sense. So we're just going to have about 20 minutes of practice. And then we're going to have a bit more verbal, some Q&A if you feel like it. And actually, I haven't been feeling very verbal. I think ever since last night with those mantras and that long meditation, and then I was really glad that we made the decision not to lead the morning ones. And then the further practice that we did this morning has left me sort of hovering between partly cognitive and partly not cognitive, and really, yeah. So anyway, I thought for this meditation, I'm just going to invite you to be mindful of the sound of the bell, the bowl. I might even do two different bowls, and then just allow the vibrations to be there in your body and be there breathing and see what happens, really. Yeah. Just be open and yeah, and that we'll be all sitting here aware of each other, that sense of solidarity that Paramananda talked about earlier. You know, we're all here breathing, being, existing, partaking of life. So if you just want to get yourselves in whatever position is comfortable for you, Thank you. In your own time. Just bringing more awareness again. Your body sitting here, breathing in, breathing out. All of us here. In, breathing out. All as if alive. That thread connecting us throughout our lives and also connecting us with others in the world. as you prepare to come back to the group, maybe just imagining in your mind's eye, seeing those faces on the screen again, but also being aware of people's presence in the world. Still connected, wherever we may be. And we have opened our eyes, come back to the group, maybe just quietly for a minute, taking each other in. Okay, so kind of got an open space, talk meditation, share anything that you may have noticed in your practice or anything that came up listening to Paramananda's talks last night and today, or and just to say that in the past, sometimes we've recorded, sometimes we haven't recorded the Q&A, but people seem to appreciate having that as a resource, and often some interesting stuff comes up. So it's just going to be on the web, on this private website, retreat website. But if you don't want to be visible, you can always stop your video and give yourself a random name. So that nobody knows you're here. And if you don't do that, then we assume it's going to be okay just to record it and stick it up on the website. Okay, so I suggest just unmute yourself and say anything, but if you want to put anything in the chat, you can put comments, questions in the chat. And if you want to do that privately, you can do that to Praninita or me, if you don't want people to see what you've said. So,
hi. I'd like to ask Paramananda, just to give some idea or expression that we have the breath as a tool and the breath is always there, but sometimes you have moments where the breath isn't there, such as stress or shock, or perhaps waking up and having a lucid dream or something like that. Have you got anything that you could kind of share that might be helpful, as in how to work around that in those moments where it's not there? And obviously facing that, I'm looking at as well that the breath, we can, in a sense, take it for granted that one day there will be our last breath as well. So anyway, I've had sort of thought lines like this going on this afternoon, and just to have your opinion or voice to something would be helpful.
Thank you, Catherine. And actually, can I say that if people ask or say something, you just say your name. Paramananda.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, but I might be muted. I'm not absolutely sure obviously for most people they're not aware of their breath, are they, most of the time? It's good. Autotonic action, isn't a breath. We don't make it happen. It's just happening. When I say it's always there, I'm not saying I didn't mean that we're always aware of it. I just meant it's always available to our awareness. We're always potentially aware of it. I mean, there might be some extraordinary. I don't know about when you're asleep, really. I'm worried about that, really. Because that part of yourself is kind of gone to sleep, isn't it? That self-aware part, unless you're actually dreaming. Well, you might or might not be aware, kind of thing. Yeah. Of course, if you're in danger or something, it might be that you're not aware of your breath, because the system's been flooded with adrenaline or whatever. Or at a moment of shock, I think quite often people stop breathing, don't they? But I having said all that, I think through meditation, if your meditation always includes the breath, I think you can train yourself more or less to be aware of the breath continuously when you're awake, not in some kind of heavy or, I think the question for me is more what blocks that awareness, And I think what I was trying to get at is that because many of us, I quite often use this word, I think we collapse into our cognitive part of our awareness, and a lot of people lose the awareness not only of their breath. I mean, but also maybe of their environment, where they are, whatever. They just sort of become very introverted in a particular sort of way. And actually, I don't think that's very useful from a meditative point of view, actually. Or maybe in a more general sense, I'm not saying there aren't times when we're intensely concentrating on something. I'm reminded, I heard this program about these people who do these micro engravings. I don't know if people are aware of these micro engravings where they engrave, a huge amount of words on a tiny surface. Now, there's one bloke, they do it under a microscope. And this guy had, in order for his hand to be steady enough, he had to do it in the gap between heartbeats. Anyway, I don't know why that comes to mind, but yeah, I don't know. If do you want to say anything else? Because I'm not. I'm sort of. I suppose I'm interested in what you're trying to get at in a way. Not quite sure.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, I think it's highlighted the significance of bringing awareness to the breath with greater fluidity throughout the whole day, you know, in relation to what you're doing, to kind of hold that awareness with the breath and then let the breath sort of become a calming to the mind and actually to rest in that breath in the moments. But yeah, I mean, so for instance, last night, you know, I woke up, you know, I had a dream and I was completely, you know, fighting and scrabbling for my breath. And because the awareness wasn't there that to tell me that actually I was having a dream and it's nothing really there, you know. And yeah, it's frightening, you know, and yeah, so I just, yeah, I was just interested. But yeah, I think that practice ongoing, as in that awareness with the breath to hold experience as it arises, and to cultivate a, you know, a deeper embodiment of that, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, it's such an interesting area, this, isn't it? Because to me, it actually, I don't want to sound too esoteric or confuse people, but it actually raises in my mind, what is awareness? What do we mean by awareness? You know, and I'm using the breath as a shorthand, really, because it's a shorthand for just being kind of physically aware of your body. Because if you're aware of your body, well, being aware of your breath is one way of strengthening physical awareness, but if you are aware of your body, you're going to be aware of your breath, because your body's always breathing, you know, and it's quite, and I suspect, I mean, I haven't got any evidence for this really, but I suspect if you're in a relaxed, open state, there is a certain amount of body awareness involved in that state, you know. I think we're incredibly, as a culture now, we're incredibly distracted most of the time. You know, we're rarely in a kind of relaxed, open state. You know, our idea of relaxing these days is usually to seek input, isn't it? You know, we watch we listen to music, we watch a video, or we do things, you know. It's more or less like we want input to sort of block something or cover up something. I think it's quite unusual for people just to do nothing these days. But I contrast this with sort of animals, where animals seem, on the whole, quite happy to do nothing. I mean, you might say, well, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but... And I suspect that animals, can you say this? I mean, it's a difficult area, this, isn't it? I don't quite know what I'm trying to say. I suppose I'm trying to say, I think I'm thinking about this or feeling about this, that this is a natural state, you know, to have quite a high body awareness, and that would include some awareness of the breath. It's just a natural state. It's not anything special, really. Mm-hmm. But we've moved away from that, and we're increasingly moving away from that, I think. And we're becoming increasingly more cerebral. And it's more or less like, I mean, it, you know, one way of understanding it is that kind of focused part of our brain, it's the left side, isn't it? The left side has sort of become dominant, you know. where this more relaxed, open awareness has become, you know, is declined. I mean, there's that wonderful book, isn't that Gilchrist book, that Master and His Messenger, is it called?
Master and His Emissary.
Emissary, yeah. Well, he talks about this a lot, really, not only from a psychological or physiological perspective, you know, but also from a historical perspective. He's sort of claiming that the sort of intellectual part of us has become dominant, where it should really be subservient. So we engage it when we need it, rather than it's constantly running. I think that's what I feel, that in most people, that part of that, as soon as they wake up to when they go to sleep, that part of them is constantly running. And we think that's a natural, normal state. And I don't think it is.
Could I say something, Paramahansa?
Thank you. I'd split it into objectifying the breath again, and you've just reminded me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jackie?
Yes, could I say something? I've experienced panic disorder, which is something that's coming quite to the fore at the moment with the mental health that problems that have been occurring in the last year or so. And the breath is, in this condition, the breath is interrupted and I become breathless. It's a mental thing. It's not a physical condition. I'll get into an anxiety state about something that's coming up, about coming to the Buddhist temple, about having to see somebody about something I don't want to talk about. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It can be not very serious, and I will become quite breathless and unable to get myself, you know, out the door. And it is purely, and I know, I engage with it, I know this is what's happening, and I have got to calm myself down. And it's not easy. And the only way I'm being taught now in pulmonary rehab, where I'm going for exercises at the moment, I'm being taught to breathe through my nose. You must breathe in through the nose, out through the mouth or the nose, it doesn't matter, but in through the nose, and the calming will come down almost immediately if you stick to it. I don't know if that's any help, it's just how I manage that emotional breathlessness. I don't know if it was real. I mean I'm often breathless, but that is not anything I can do about, but this is something I can try to handle. I don't know if that helps too.
Well, I think it does help, actually, but I think it also, you know, illustrates just how linked to our mental states our breath is, isn't it? Which, from our point of view as meditators, is a good thing, because it means we can work with our mental states through our breath.
Yes.
And it's a feedback loop between those two, isn't it?
It's just not easy, because trying to push down anything which is one of those thoughts that you can't get rid of. It's one of those, I can't think of the word for it now, but it's impulsive.
So does anyone else have something they'd like to say? Yeah.
Hello, Bodilila.
Hello, Carl.
Hi, Parmananda, is K. For him, I'm always K. it was really lovely listening to those bells. Beautiful meditation, Bodhilila. So thank you very much for that. And this morning was something very amazing, Parmananda. So lovely. My heart was open like a lotus flower. You said in your talk certain things, it really affect deeply to my heart, that value your breath and you value the world. It's such a beautiful thing. And this breath offers, you know, to understand how we fully experience this world. So that was really beautiful. And when you are reciting the poem, it was beautiful poem. And in the end, you said that in the poem was like that, the kindness is like a shadow, always with you. And it was so, so deep and meaningful for me. And it opened my heart that, yeah, it's true. And I thought about you, that this moment, you are giving this kindness, guiding us. I thought about my little Sangha. They are supporting me. And I thought about the world, the suffering going on. And with the suffering, the heart opens. And the love and kindness comes through that. And we connect with the world. So it was so beautiful. And thank you very much for that. I only wanted to share this, that it was amazing. And thank you.
Well, thank you, Kay.
Hi, sorry, I don't know how to raise my hand, but if it's possible to say something.
Yeah, sure, go ahead, Nadia.
Thanks. I think I'm just finding it really difficult to meditate at the moment and bringing myself to the point where I can just focus and meditate for a consolidated period of time. And I just wondered whether you had any advice on what to do when you're in a mind state where maybe you're suffering from restlessness and distraction. Thank you.
Well, I would meditate with that state of restlessness and distraction. Sit with it. I think Paramahansa said at one point, was it when we went down to lie down? He said, just let your mind do whatever it is, and if it wants to worry, let it worry. I mean, I know there's times when there can be a lot of difficult, painful, scary stuff going on, and that might not necessarily be the best time to be sitting down to meditate. But I think there's also something about just being with what's there, with kindness. And if we can sit with it, sit with it. I think every time it's different, isn't it? So there's certain times when it might be helpful to do something that you know might help, and sometimes just giving it the space to just be there. But other times, you know, being more grounded in the body might help. Is there physical restlessness, or it's just restlessness in the mind? So you're muted. You're still muted.
I don't know. Oh, there we go. Sorry, I don't know why I was struggling with that. Yeah, I think. There's a real sense of like needing to walk a lot. There's a real sense of, like I think I'm focused, but then I can realize like for the last 2 days, I've forgotten my keys. And so I couldn't, for example, Sunday night when we were doing the puja, or I think it was a welcoming ritual, which I assumed was puja, I couldn't attend because I was locked out of the house. So I know on some level, I'm not integrated and I'm not focused. And I know that this happens when I hit traumatic memory, I lose focus. And that's what happened to me recently. And trying to come back, I mean, this is why I came to this meditation retreat, trying to come back to myself and being grounded just takes so much time. And it is very physical. And it is, as you said, or asking about, there's a real physical component to it. So it's a really weird sense of both being in the freeze state, but also needing to just, you know, I just can't sit at home. Like I have to be out. I can't, like it's, at that times I feel very immobile. It's, I can't describe it. I suppose a swing between needing to be very active and then being very inactive.
Well, you were mentioning when you hit a traumatic memory. So I think when we hit a traumatic memory, it may not be easy to be doing our normal meditation practice. It might not even be appropriate to be doing that. Yeah. And we do often have a lot of trauma stored in the body, and there's all kinds of like energy that gets released with that. So I'm not surprised that you're wanting to do a lot of physical stuff. And also, I wasn't quite sure what you meant by focus, because it sounded like maybe it was awareness or mindfulness. Maybe you've got this idea that you need to be very integrated and focus your mind, not distracted when you sit.
So, like, for example, just... by focus, I suppose I mean being aware. Just things like, for example, forgetting my keys 2 days in a row, I think for me was a sign that I'm not being as aware of my surroundings as I could be. And even though on some level I think I am cognitively, that's becoming a reminder that I'm not, in a weird way, quite symbolic about the keys, losing my keys. I'm not coming back to my home or my body. If I think of my body as my home, I'm not able to be in my body for very long. And I suppose it's just being patient with that. And hopefully just throughout this retreat will just give me really good conditions to keep coming back.
Yeah. Well, I think it's being kind to yourself. I think, you know, those signs are kind of like indications when there is a lot going on and maybe too much going on. And I think it's also like, well, if it's your body that's experiencing trauma or releasing trauma or having memories of trauma, then it may be that it is hard to be in your body at the moment, and maybe that's not, you know, to be trying to sit and be very much in that place, it might not be the best timing for that. So I'm just going to say that. I can't say what's the best thing for your practice right now. So I think it's very much sort of like seeing what's the kindest thing and what seems to be working best for you.
Yeah.
And maybe more physical things like walking meditation might be helpful, or if you do things like yoga or Tai Chi or something, you can do in a very meditative way. Or maybe chanting, actually. I find when I'm in emotional distress, quite often when it's harder for me to meditate, I find that chanting is a way of like being in my body in a way that's more contained than I'm able to do. Did you have any thoughts, Paramandra? It's nearly
done. Well, I was going to say the same thing, really. I mean, I think chanting is probably the best thing you can do if you really feel you can't sit still, in a way. Because it is an energetic practice, you know, you kind of got to meet things on their own level, haven't you, in a sense? That makes any sense, you know. Chanting is one way of doing that. You can kind of express the energy in that way, you know. I mean, if you're really distressed in some way, it's very hard just to sit still. It's very hard, you know, I think. I mean, I'm just thinking, well, you know, I mean, these days, for me, I must say, exercising is just as important as meditating, you know. Just, I think it's just as important as meditation. I wouldn't put one. Yeah. It's hard, isn't it? I think trying to maintain the posture, not, I think if we change the emphasis of the, what we think of meditation from trying to control our mental experience or our emotional experience to just trying to learn to align and relax the body, and then the rest takes care of itself, you know. It's sort of one follows from the other, and you know, don't overthink it, really, you know. Just work. If you want to meditate, just work with trying to maintain a posture, an open posture, I would think. But yeah, I would definitely, particularly if there is a mantra that you got some emotional connection with, or, you know,
Just breathing exercises.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because that's the central thing for the body, isn't it? I mean, when they say you calm down, you know, bring your breath down.
I think it's different for different people, so that might work for you, Jackie. But that might not be the most appropriate thing for Nadia.
Yeah. May I add something here, please? I've got it's Ellis here. A strong trauma background, and also quite a lot of a movement background, and so I have this like a trapped trauma body going on, and every now and again it gets like that. It gets a bit trapped in my system or whatever, and I find what I'm doing nowadays is like consciously, like almost like a meditation, but just shaping. So put music on or whatever, or drumming or whatever, or no sound, but actually just like releasing trauma through like conscious shaking. It's really helpful.
It's so helpful. And like after doing that, I can then sit again.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ellis. And it is time to stop now. So I'm aware that it's been just a day and an evening into the retreat, but it feels like we've already had some quite strong practice and a lot's coming up. So just, being caring towards yourself, having metta towards yourself this evening. If you can, have a sort of do something that's nurturing for yourself. And then we'll have a meditation at 8. And then another session at 10:30 and 4 like today. So, yeah, take care, everyone. And thank you all for coming and sharing, those of you who shared.